He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And I think we are all here for the first time of a few broadcast tapings, but I'd like to start out this week's show by talking about storm-related preparation for drivers with their cars that may be parked outside, like mine are, or many of mine are. And you come outside in the morning, prepare to get going on the road. And there are a few things that I learned over the last storm we had that I've known about, but I had to pay attention to it because I didn't do what I'm about to say owners or listeners should do if they want to listen. If you come out and your car is covered with snow, these are the areas which need to be addressed before you start driving down the road. There are not many of those to start driving. The main one is clearing the snow off your vehicle in two areas. It's a law in some states to clear the snow off the tops of your vehicles before you go driving on the road because of what happens when you leave the snow on the vehicle and you drive and the roof heats up when the car heats up and the snow becomes ice in many cases if it does not blow off or disappear before this happens. Then when it loosens up and blows off, it can blow into the vehicle behind you and it can possibly, if it hits at the right place, be damaging to a windshield and or the hood. That's that on that topic. The other area which I think needs to be addressed by all owners is the clearing of the snow wherever their windshield washer nozzles are on the hood, if they are on the hood, as they are in many vehicles. Some washer nozzles are tucked under the rear edge of the hood and therefore may not be directly clogged or impaired in getting the washer fluid to the windshield. Like they are on the hood. But if there is snow between the windshield and the rear edge of the hood, that should be removed too, because when you drive on roads behind tractor-trailer trucks and or any vehicles that are throwing up the stuff that starts accumulating on roads, such as slush and grit from sand trucks and that, you want your nozzles to be clear and operating so you can use them to keep your windshield clear when you're driving behind vehicles, because if you can't see out your windshield, you are doubly in danger of hurting yourself and or a vehicle ahead of you. Jay, any comments on that?
Yeah, I think Robin's absolutely right, but I think in Robin's case, Robin, if in the spring you clear your garage and put, one or two of your cars in the garage that you actually drive, you'll solve a lot of these problems.
Since I can't decide which car I'm going out in, that's hard to do ahead of a storm, Jay. Thank you very much for that comment, and we will move on. To the point that I just made, I had to stop on the road en route on a recent path because I did not do what I have just suggested to my listeners that you do, listeners, before you drive off and your car has snow accumulated in these two areas, the roof and or the hood. The other thing was that the temperatures was very low, and actually the nozzles sometimes can freeze, even though they've got windshield washer fluid in them, that at least to the exit point on the nozzles remain thawed in the tubing, because most windshield washer fluids are good for 20 below. The better ones are good to 30 or 40 below, and at least that's for our listening area. Aside from the Arctic areas of Canada and Minnesota, which might need better than 30 below windshield washer protection. Jay has recently returned to this show from having a very interesting trip across country, and I'm going to turn the show over to him for the next few minutes to let him tell you the experiences that he had, including storm, the presence of storms around him, in front of him, and behind him.
Well, yes. In the last few weeks, I've been traveling quite a bit, and have done a couple of road trips across the country. I did one trip a few weeks ago from Denver back east, back here to Connecticut, and just this past week, I did a week-long trip starting in L.A. and driving back again back east, back here to Connecticut. And I think whether you're going on a road trip or whether you're just going on a short drive, that the key is planning the trip. I mean, it sounds a little excessive, but planning can be different things for different trips. Obviously, going on a multi-day trip, I was trying to make sure I had everything in the vehicle that I needed at the tip of my hands. And I haven't had that in a long time. I even got a one of those suction cups to put the GPS on the
windshield.
On the windshield. Thank you, Robin. And I know Robin's been doing that for years, and he's totally right. And we should do that. And also using, I was using two phones, one as a GPS and one just as a phone when I needed it. I had my earbuds when I needed to actually speak, talk on the phone. And you want to minimize distraction. And if you're going to go on long trips and you're snacking, make sure you have your snacks, right, again, at the tip of your hands. Know where you're going. And in this particular case last week, weather was a big issue because I actually started the trip on the West Coast. And had the storm, the big storm we had this past week. I had it right in back of me for a couple days, and then overnight it passed me. And then during the day I would go through it again until I got down in somewhere in Tennessee and started going back up 81. And woke up on the last morning with 600 miles to go, realizing that the trip up 81 was just going to be in an ice storm from the beginning to the end. And again, so, change the plan. I had taken the southern route up to then, going down to Arizona and into New Mexico, Texas, Arkansas, Tennessee, and then coming back on the eastern seaboard, and actually should have gone all the way to Charlotte before going back up north. And on the last day, just looked at the – I was overlapping, looking both at the radar and Google Maps, and then figured, okay, well – try to go back to I-95 and made my way through Virginia, skirting the ice storm and going towards D.C. and then just having a hellish drive back from D.C. in a torrential downpour all the way back home. And again, trying to plan the trip, and there's just so much planning you can do, and then the rest of the time you adapt. And
can I interrupt for a second about adapting?
Sure.
Because it's something that I find that most people are really – have difficulty with, especially a slightly different generation that is absolutely used to their phone telling them what to do. I understand that you used all of the recent technology, but did you find that knowing that some of the options you chose came from experience?
On my last day, really having to avoid, and I was really trying to avoid the ice storm, it's just, making a plan. I stopped a couple times along the road and spent, 15, 20 minutes on the side of the road, changing the plan slightly or confirming that I was going to go one way or another. And if you don't do that, you end up being in situations where, you end up in a 20-car pileup on an interstate. And so in some cases, I just didn't get on the interstate where I knew there was a pileup. So it's making a plan and then reassessing the plan every step of the way. But, yeah, use normal tools. And one thing I really miss, and I will get one, I'll get a 2023 edition, is a real Rand McNally
road atlas.
Yeah, that's funny because I was going to ask you if you had a road atlas.
I don't anymore. And I used to. I just love those things
because they are
very valuable.
They are, and I'm just going to weigh in from analog land. One of the things that they do is they give you a sense of, I won't say literal scale, but
yeah.
But
well, you can use that term because you do. You have an actual literal scale of where you are, where you're going, and alternatives that you can take. Aside from trying to read a GPS running a line on a screen saying stay on 81 or whatever,
right.
And they don't know what you can do alternatively when you might need to do what Jay is telling everybody that he was doing on this trip. The other thing before he continues is I want him to tell the listeners what kind of drivers were on the roads and what they were either screwing up or doing well during this kind of weather conditions, mainly having to do with probably the speed everybody was trying to travel. And then, Jay, go continue.
Well, yes, I will. I will. You know.
Gently, Jay.
Yes, I will. There are a lot of people out there who are just not behaving either very smartly or. There's just a lot of people doing not very good stuff. I harp on truck drivers because they're not any worse than anybody else, but they're supposed to be professional drivers. And my thing is, don't trust anybody else on the road. Don't trust and don't trust truck drivers. Not because you can't trust a truck driver, it's because, you know, they have 80,000 pounds of steel barreling down the highway, and if anything does go wrong, whether it's their fault or not, doesn't matter. The consequences can be dramatic, and so you don't want to be near them. I was in rainstorms down south, pouring rain, in the middle of the night or late at night.
Dark.
And trucks going, you know, 75 miles an hour in a 75 zone. So yes, technically maybe legal, but it's just insane. They can't see anything, and the roads are slippery. And if anything goes wrong, they can't stop. And tailgating cars is just not
a good idea.
It's borderline criminal.
Were these human trucks?
Human
yes,
trucks.
And this is where, and I was being facetious with Robin the other day when I got back, and saying that, you know, I was going to disagree with him again, and I look forward to the day when trucks are driven by autonomous, you know, autonomous technology, and I'm serious about that. I do think that technology will be better than human.
If they program
behavior,
the technology
in a lot
correctly,
in most cases.
Yes, Jay.
Yeah, no, that's an element too. It depends on how it's programmed. But I mean, there's just a lot of environmental unconsciousness, and
yeah.
it absolutely used to be.
It's amazing how people try to drive at posted speeds in weather conditions where you really should disregard the capability of possibly driving a posted speed is like 75 miles an hour, as Jay says, was a standard speed limit in many places in the middle of America and some of the roads. And then as you have, whether it's a car or whether it's an 80,000-pound tractor trailer truck rolling along at those speeds, when you've got blinding rain, your windshield wipers barely do a job at high speed, not to mention not doing a job at low speed, and you cannot see between the wiper swipes what something that might happen in these types of conditions. So safety is certainly a foremost pragmatic thing to think about when you are in conditions which are less than perfect for you to be rolling along at maximum possible speeds and conditions.
Well, and the smartest thing, you know, back to, you know, road conditions and making decisions on whether to get on the road or not, is that, you know, I know we're going into the holiday season and people absolutely want to go certain places, whether they're flying or driving or, you know, but you have to, you know, consider, you know, is it worth getting on the road? Is it worth traveling? And you know, and if the answer is yes, then obviously you want to be as safe as possible. But I was mind-boggled by the fact that I was on Interstate I-10 and an I-40, and the number of vehicles on the road was just insane. And everybody knew that storm was, you know, about to hit, or we were right in the middle of it. And I would say 80-90% of the vehicles were tractor-trailer trucks, and I realized that, you know, stuff does keep, and, you know, it still needs to move, and Amazon Prime and second-day delivery and all those things, FedEx, are important to a lot of people, and those guys cannot miss deadlines. But, you know, if you don't need to be on the road.
Not at the risk of killing everybody. Excuse me.
Well, then you don't know that's going to happen, Jill. So, yes, of course, we don't want to kill everybody. But Jay's right. They are on delivery schedules, and that seems to be the priority of the companies whose trucks are on the road, especially during the holiday season when stores are waiting for goods to arrive.
Right.
People are waiting for gifts
to
arrive.
I'm not against it. I'm just advocating for a little bit of environmental awareness.
We don't have enough tractor-trailer drivers listening to us to
you don't know
go
that.
On this at the moment.
So, having said all of the above, road trips are just great. I love them. I do them anytime I can, and anybody asking me to you know, bring a vehicle back or, you know, if it makes economic sense, hey, by all means, I love doing it. And the other thing, and this is a little, you know, a little awkward talking about that now, when road conditions get really bad, I need just total silence. I went 2 days, my last 2 days of driving in this vehicle without ever putting the radio on. And I love listening to the radio in you know, while driving, but at some point it just becomes a distraction, like anything else, like you know, snacking, like obviously talking on the phone, and you know, it driving becomes, you know, a serious thing, and you just have to focus on it. And as much as I enjoy it, you know, and people look at me sometimes a little funny, thinking, you know, you're overthinking this and making it more serious than it is. But anyway, road trips are fun.
They
love
are
doing
indeed. And to Jay's point, and Jay and I have been on this show many times discussing the virtues of electric cars versus fossil fuel vehicles. And Jay was putting in 600 to maybe 800 miles a day and didn't have to stop to recharge at any point because he wasn't in an electric vehicle. And that is still out there as being a problem for people.
Absolutely.
For travelers like road trippers. Like Jay and sometimes your host, Robin Leach here, who is going to be taking a trip into Canada shortly of several hundred miles more than the daily range of any electric vehicle currently on the road that is affordable.
So let me budget. I did think about you, Robin, and your argument against you know, electric vehicles and the range issue. And obviously it remains an issue. I mean, when I think the most reasonable driving you can do in a day, in my case, I find it to be around 600 miles. And I did the trip once with a car, and I would stop once. And I recommend stopping more than once, but when I stop, I actually try to combine everything I need to do, including walking and running and doing a little exercise. But so I would go 300, 350 miles between stops. That is more than what you would do with most electric cars, right? I mean,
Currently,
the reality is, you know, a Tesla is getting, you know, 300, 320 mile range. Practically, you're probably, you know, you're like with a gas car. I mean, you need a buffer, you need a reserve, so you're maybe doing 250. I'm not quite sure. 200, 250. So, yes, you're stopping more often, and you're stopping longer. Having said that, also, a lot of these big rest areas, you know, across the country have, you know, superchargers and plenty of them available with not a single car getting charged. So
right
there
now, that's
is,
true.
There are more and more options for electric cars, but yes, it still is going to take a little more time to just, you know,
well,
a few miles.
Well, I want to chime
country.
In, Jay, because I was at a ski area in Vermont over this broadcast show's show. And I noted that there was not, at least in the parking areas I looked at, any electric chargers possibly accessible or available to any electric cars that might have been, and most of them were Teslas, incidentally, and there were several in the ski area parking lot I was going through, in case that they were at the low end of their charge capacity. Who knows where they were going to go when they finished skiing. So that will remain a constant topic periodically on this show, I think. I'd like to switch gears because we're running out of time and say that I am very sad, and Jay mentioned it to me, to hear that maybe my favorite Jeep, because I own three of them, the Cherokee, may be at near the end of its model run because Stellantis is closing down the one factory that makes them. When are they doing it, Jay? March?
In the spring sometime.
And I have not been able to ascertain whether or not it's going to pop up in another plant under possibly an electric version. But to anybody who likes Cherokees or has heard me espouse the features that I like about the Cherokee on these shows, wants a Cherokee before they become extinct, and therefore you'd have to buy only a used one, you better get an order in now. And that's all.
Go buy a couple if you want more. Yeah, I think that's what you need to do. A little like the police forces and the taxi fleets around the country when the Ford Crown Vic went out of production about 10 years ago.
And then on the other end, we got the Prius, which both Jay and I think the new design is really a rage. There's a lot of discussion about whether the Prius is going to survive because the sales are way down on the current model. And I think the Prius is going to have a revival, but that has yet to be seen, and we'll see that in 2023 and forward, I think.
Robin, I am in total agreement with you. I think the new Prius is going to be a big hit.
And anybody who's a Prius lover who's listening to this show should wait for this new one to come out. If you are if you like designs of cars as well as the features that it comes with, which is very high mileage, very low maintenance, and very high reliability for 100,000 miles and beyond, even though the batteries are only warranted for, I think, no more than 100,000 miles.
Hey, by the way,
yes?
Speaking of electric vehicles, and I think I'd mentioned this to you guys, I did see an Amazon Rivian electric truck, I think it was in St. Louis a few weeks ago, on the roads, and I just read that Amazon now has over 1,000 of those electric delivery vehicles
on
the road.
Is it a van?
Yeah, the van. Okay. Looks pretty cool. Pretty awesome.
It'll be interesting to see how these electric vans and vehicles survive in the rural areas, such as Vermont, for example, when you've got lots of hills which absorb a lot of power, especially when they start out fully loaded and have to come from, I don't know where they would come from to get to Peru, Vermont, maybe Manchester, but maybe more like Bennington or Rutland.
Those vehicles, those last-mile delivery vehicles, whether it be Amazon, UPS, FedEx, the post office, they don't do many miles in a day. You know, those vehicles with 100, 150-mile range can do the job, and that's what the target should be, and that's what I think those Rivian vehicles do. I don't think they do a lot more than 100 or 150 miles.
You may be right, but, you know, I keep talking about in our listing area, Waterbury is a start-out point for, I think, some of the warehouses, and it's 45 miles to get up to, or 50 miles, depending on where the warehouse is, to get to, let's say, Lakeville, Salisbury, Sharon, broadcast area, and then you start out. And you're right, you can do a lot of deliveries in 50 miles of delivery area, and if you've got 50 miles left to get back, you are right, Jay. 150 miles should be enough to do it. Down in the New Canaan area, where I experience deliveries taking place as late as 9 or 10 o'clock from Amazon or sometimes even FedEx addresses where I am at. That's why I know that what time it is. I don't know how many deliveries they made prior to getting to my location, for example. But I guess the range shouldn't be a problem there because they probably start out much closer to the delivery areas than they do up in our listing area.
All right, in the final 30 seconds, anybody got anything?
Jay does.
I got lots of things. New vehicles, Kia EV6 GT. Absurd performance, but that vehicle is probably coming at the right time because for some unknown reason, Kia EV6 sales are down.
Well, let's talk about these high performance electric things,
next week, everybody's coming out with.
All right,
we have 10 seconds.
You got 6.
The comment is: are the drivers up to using that electric acceleration, or is it just a bragging point to have, like they are in the fossil fuel vehicles?
We'll answer that next time.
Stay tuned. Same bat time, same bat channel. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.